keep their remarks to 5 minutes, so that'll give them an idea of how much time we can make sure we get to everyone, because some people have to leave, and we have a lot more on our agenda, as you can see. So let's go to questions for Mr. Silva, Senator Dukes.
Oh, sorry. Yesterday we had the Commission on Black Affairs, and one of our members was asking their director, how do you represent the diversity you have within and the overlap where there may be the Committee on Asian Affairs and the Committee on Black Affairs? I mean, there's an overlap. There may be people who could be easily represented by more than one group. And I was thinking about that this morning as I was recalling a meeting I was asked to attend nearly a year ago by a business owner who had come to the United States from Mexico recently, I mean within the last 3 years, and started their own business in the United States. And I was asked if I would be willing to meet with other professional Hispanics to talk about their needs. And I was delighted to do it. And as we were visiting, I asked them, because they spelled out a number of needs that they had that they would like some help from the legislature, I said, what about the Commission on Hispanic Affairs? And have you talked with them? And the response that I got was, they don't represent us. They represent a different group of Hispanics who have different needs, very real, very viable needs, but that perhaps are not fluent in English, perhaps are not professional, but we also have needs, and so we're turning to legislators. Can you address that? I mean, I know the diversity is out there, and what you're doing appears to be wonderful. I mean, I'm sure you're reaching a lot of people, but every group has that kind of diversity in it.
Right. Thank you, Madam Senator Dukes. How you address that in the programs that the commission has, in the programs that I've directed, that's always something that has to be in the back of our minds. We have to try to reach all Latinos, all Hispanics in our efforts, and we have to appreciate their differences. And that's part of the training that is out there now is valuing the different cultures even within the Latino or Hispanic populations. So that's always a challenge. Now, as far as individuals feeling like they are not a participant in the efforts that the Hispanic Commission is involved in, I would say that all Hispanics, all Latinos would benefit from the commission, whether they are first generation or whether they are third or fourth professionals. They could benefit from the efforts that we are involved in, not only benefit from the programs and services that we're providing, but also participating and giving back to the community. So I think it's more our responsibility of how we are going to draw that out of them.
I know you've only been on the job 2 or 3 days, so okay. This is probably an unfair question. How do you, maybe perhaps of your commissioner, how do you plan to do that?
One of the ways we are addressing that particular question and the issue is that a number of our commissioners are of varying backgrounds in terms of their professions, in terms of their contact with their communities. Some of us are educators, some of us are in law, some of us are in just various professions and various jobs. And each and every one of us within our communities reach out beyond just the Hispanic community. We reach out to minority communities, whether it's in business, whether it's in school, whether it's in the political arena. So there is that outreach. Perhaps the downside of that is that we do it individually instead of as a whole. And one of the ways that we have been attempting to address those issues is to all come together, all the commissions to meet together. I believe that we've only accomplished that once in the last year. I certainly see that in the future there is room to get together much more often.
Thank you. Further questions?
I guess, no, we'll rush for time.
No, go ahead, Representative Hayden, if you have a question.
Again, and I've asked this question before, just a question on semantics. You use the term Latino and Hispanic sort of interchangeably, and I don't know the difference. Is there one?
There is a difference. Individuals will look at themselves as Hispanic if they their family stems from in somewhat connected to Spain. Latino is an all-encompassing name for whether it's from Spain or Central America or South America or Mexico, and that's the way I understand it. If anyone wants to clarify better,
I would.
Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, sort of a geographical thing. Hispania is Hispanic with roots in Spain.
And I'll allow Dr. Debbie Trevino to help us out even more.
There is no country as Hispania. It's España. And you will find that historically people want to be called Hispanic because of some negative connotations that the term has had in the past. Others want to be called Spanish. Others want to be called Latinos. And then there are some that want to be called Chicanos. Within my family, and we are 14 in my family, you will find brothers and sisters that would hate to be called Chicanos. They want to be called Hispanic. Others, Latinos. So I believe, and certainly through my studies, that it is a matter of a personal preference. I personally do not care what I'm called. Just call it to my face and that'll be all right.
Very good, very good.
All right, Doctor.
I didn't mean to catch up. Dr. Trevino, I noticed that you have come today as a member of the commission, but you are not the chair of the commission. Is your chair ill or was what? And who is your chair?
Our chair is Juan Ortegon. He has been the chair for the last year and a half, I believe, maybe almost 2 years.
Is that a two-year term?
Yes, it's a two-year term. I believe that his term is up in June. I think that Mr. Silva can address that.
Thank you.
Okay. Madam Senator Clarno, Mr. Ortegon works for the military, and he is involved in a lot of training at this time. And although he tried to get away from that, because of the schedule, the way it was arranged, he could not do so at this time.
Nice that you were able to take his place. And I would just add one more comment. You've covered a lot of things, Mr. Silva, in which you do. I'm a little concerned that we don't have an awful lot on health care for Hispanics or Latinos to have outreach for needs they might have, and also families, information about families and where they can go to get help and education and our education system. So I just would share that some of the other commissions do a little more in that area, and I think your focus is a little bit narrower than I would hope that you could do to reach all the needs in your communities that people have. And I'm kind of striked. I hope I didn't miss it, but one of the biggest celebrations, as I mentioned earlier, is the collage, cultural collage, where we have the whole community come together. The Jefferson County, which I represent, is the only school district in the state with a minority of white population. So the Hispanics and the Native Americans, the Indians, and the white community get together and have this collage of culture. It's a huge celebration. So I hope that sometime, I realize you have limited funds, but I think that's something that could be taken to other communities and very well implemented if you have members who have an opportunity. I know you have Trinidad at the Chute Valley Water Co-op over there in Madras, and I'm sure he can share a lot with you about how that put together in our community. So I just wanted to give you that message.
Thank you.
Anyone else have questions of either of the witnesses before they go rest a minute? Thank you very much.
May I follow your comment? I sit on the governor's Oregon Health Plan that has a tremendous committee on working with the Spanish-speaking population. And again, as I mentioned before, many of us have wear different hats at different times. I represent that particular component for the medical services, and certainly getting updated as to what services are available and how to reach the Spanish-speaking population. And in terms of the collage that you're speaking of, there is a very, very strong one in Woodburn where the English-speaking population is also in the minority. I had the opportunity to teach graduate studies in Woodburn and to the teachers there, and they do have a lot of activities that we are involved in with the Hispanic community and the Russian community. So we do have that in Woodburn and certainly at Grant Elementary right here in Salem. So again, it seems like many of us do little things and not all together. Perhaps if we brought all of our efforts together, it would be more noticeable, but there are things happening.
Yeah, and I think it's important in your radio broadcast to share the kind of things that you know related to health and education. Senator Zook?
Yeah, I'd like to add my comments to the chair's about health care. A few months ago, I met with the Clatsop County Hispanic Commission and was shocked at the inadequacy of the health care that was being received by non-English-speaking community there, which is Hispanic. I mean, that's and Finnish in that community. So, access to AT&T just wasn't doing it. When somebody has to go in to have a medical procedure and there's no one there to really explain it. Now, some of us in the legislature have been attempting to do something about it, but I think that the Hispanic Commission has a better feel, I would hope, for the depth of that problem and for solutions that would be workable than some of the rest of us. And I think you have an opportunity to take a real leadership role there. I mean, literally, people must be dying in this state for inadequate care, not through the fault or the intention of anyone, but literally because they don't understand the prescription that's written or the directions that are given or the explanation.
Madam Senator Dukes, you are very correct. And one of the efforts that we are involved in is through the carousel of information that I had mentioned earlier. The Health Division is a participant in that. They provide tables of information in Spanish, and they have a representative who is there. So I think for us, the key is connecting with the other state agencies and their efforts so that we can work together in providing that information to the community. So that's just one way.
Well, part of your mission is legal. And in your testimony, you were explaining to us the executive order of the president. And it seems to me that you would have the ability to take that and try to legally enforce that in areas of the state. And once it's done in one area, it's going to spread.
That's correct. I agree. Thank you.
Representative
Hayden. Well, in delivering healthcare, just a thought that popped into my mind. I'd like to share in delivering healthcare. Clearly, it's impossible to have a representative of all the languages on earth in every medical clinic. But for $30 at Costco, you can buy a little translator that'll translate into about 8 languages, and anyone could buy those. And if they couldn't read their prescription, they type their prescription in and read it in their native language.
Just someone is trying to explain to you what you need to do in order to have a mammogram. I don't think that translator is going to do it. When they're explaining to you that you have to have a hysterectomy and you leave the hospital thinking you can still conceive.
I thought you were talking about prescriptions.
Well, that's part of it, that you're diabetic and you took all of your medicine in 2 weeks that was meant for a month. again, and I don't know how much the thing costs, but I think there's an obligation on the part of healthcare providers to band together in the smaller communities or something. And I also think the state has a role. We provide an awful lot of Oregon health plan money to providers in this state. And if that's the level of service some of the Oregon health plan patients are getting, I think we've missed the mark.
Well, and new people that arrive in a community, if there are people identified in that community that are able to speak fluently in both languages, that this people could be told to call and talk to them about, I'm going to a doctor's appointment, can you go with me or can you help me understand what is going to happen to me if I'm having a hysterectomy?
Apparently, they tell me the difficulty is that a lot of people, Hispanic-speaking people, do not know the terms, the medical terms.
Even the ones that are fluent?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think we're all concerned, and if there's no further questions, we'll go with Linda Ames's presentation. Thank you both very much.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Linda Ames with the Department of Administrative Services. I'm going to go very quickly over this. This is a little budget summary. So you have some time for the public testimony. This is, once again, a current service level budget in terms of the general fund. If you look at page 2, it is a fairly large increase in terms of a percentage for general funds. That's basically the result of the personal services roll-up. It's also a large increase in limitation for other funds. The Spanish classes that were started in 98 have expanded considerably, and they do, the agency does expect to raise about $20,000 per quarter in those classes. About half of that is used to pay the instructor, but it does provide somewhere between $8,000 and $10,000 a quarter in revenues for programs.
Madam Chair, is the instructor a contract employee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, that's right.
Thank you.
Can I just ask one question?
Certainly, Representative Butler.
Dovetailing on Representative Johnson's question, do they contract that contract an instructor through a community college that may offer this service already at Portland State University, or is it someone else?
Representative Butler, this program has been run completely separate from the community colleges. Page 4, the current service level for this agency, like most of the other, does provide the support for the director, state government service charge, and then some limited services and supplies, the general fund portion of the budget. This is all pretty. If you skip over to page 7, the only thing I did want to note, in current service level adjustments, their budget last biennium did have a half-time limited duration position that, and some funding associated with that. That was given to the agency last session, or in the 99 session. It was to provide community education on House Bill 2433 that was passed. Sure, if it was passed in the 97 session or the 99 session. It was a bill that changed the requirements for consent to search and seizure of property during traffic stops, and the Hispanic Commission was concerned about that. They did not actually in the end hire this position. They were unable to raise specific revenue for that project. They were able to accomplish some of the goals around that issue by working with some other groups and communities. The budget contains two policy packages, one to formally put the salary into the budget for bilingual pay, since it really is an absolute requirement for the director of this agency. It has not been added to the budget as general fund, but rather as permission for the agency to use $4,000 of their other funds for that purpose. The agency has been paying that and absorbing that cost during the current biennium. And policy package 3000 really increases their other fund limitation to be commensurate with what they expect their revenues during next biennium to be. And finally, the last page does give a little summary of the last revenue picture. They do expect to raise about $118,000 other funds during the current biennium. Spanish classes haven't expanded quite as quickly as we expected when we did address this issue at the emergency board, but they'll still be well over $100,000, I expect. And again, a lot of that goes to pay for the cost of the classes, especially the teacher, but it does provide a lot of other revenue.
Thank you. Is there a plan, a business plan? When you say they expect to raise $118,000 in other funds, is there a written business plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, there is not a formal plan or fiscal or sort of more general business, and I believe that is one of the things that will be addressed in the next few months.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Then how sound is the expectation of raising $118,000 if there's no plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, in this particular case, a lot of it has already been raised. It really is a lot. It needs to be a lot more formal. Right now, it's based on what's been happening and plans to expand the classes and how many classes they've been teaching and more informal discussion.
Did you want to?
Madam Representative Johnson, it's a lot of it is also based upon the revenues, as Mrs. Ames was mentioning, revenues that have already been received. As I had mentioned earlier, part of the problem is determining what the revenues have been in comparison with the expenditures. And so that is something that we need to work on to determine clearly what the revenues are that are flowing in, what the expenses are. But again, it's based on what has been coming in to date and some of the expenses that have been taken from that.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Of the $118,000, either one of you, do you have an idea what the expenses are against that revenue of $118,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, there's really two answers to that question, in the sense that the direct expenditures to run those classes is about half, so about $60,000. What it has been the problem is that the agency has been spending the other revenues on other programs, on the Youth Summit, and I think basically spent more than they were expecting in revenue.
Okay, thank you all very much. I appreciate your testimony, and seeing Dr. Trevino, you lived through it.
Thank you. You did an excellent job.
Next, I will call, rather than here. Okay. Someone that has to leave shortly, Mary Lou, and I will not attempt the last name. Good morning.
Welcome. Buenos dias, Madam Chair and committee members. How are you?
Oh, just a moment. I'm going to give Representative Butler a chance to try it.
Muy bien. What was it again? Cornejo. Sí, muy bien. And just as a mini little Spanish language, if you leave out the R, it means rabbit. So
so she wants to make sure you don't leave out the R.
That's right. Roll that R. I'm Mary Lou Cornejo, and I'm here in support of the Hispanic Commission. I am here as a community member, also as a retired service person, because I will be testifying as to the peace of youth. And I served 24 years in the Oregon Army National Guard, with 20 of those being active duty years. When I got out of the Guard, I asked myself, what do I want to do when I grow up? One of my passions that I knew was women and children. So when we said the Women's Commission raised all that money, I said, huh, yes, women. So, and as for children, I am a complete advocate for children. So I retired and decided that I needed to find another job, that it was not, the money that I got in retirement was not going to supplement the way of life that I had established. So I decided to look for a job that would impact women and children. And I went to work for Oregon State University's Extension 4-H program. Speak about youth development, that's a big one. When I was in the military, and I brought that up because it goes back to the time that I recruited for the Hispanic Commission, children from around the state for the Youth Summit in 98 that we were putting on. The commission ended up hosting the conference, and what I find in youth, especially in minority youth, is the feeling of being disconnected from society, or from the community, I should say. And sometimes from, well, a lot of times, based on figures of the dropout rate from the schools. So when I heard about this youth summit and it was leadership development, I thought, what a wonderful idea. We ended up getting youth from all around the state. And what I saw at that conference was that these youth had role models. You know, it may not seem a lot, but I would ask you to think how you would feel if you went to Mexico and you were in a school and everyone there was Mexican and you were the only Anglo or very few and no role models of teachers. When we look at those dynamics, children need to feel connected. They need to know that there's someone else that looks like them, that they made it, that there may have been a hard road to hoe, but they did it. So with what I find with the commission during that youth summit, I saw children that were able to connect with the presenters. I saw children that were involved in looking at their communities and seeing where they were going to make a difference. Now, when youth are engaged, they are out of making problems down the road. So what I loved about that piece was that here was a plan that youth could take back to their community and look at how they could be a part of the solution and not the problem. And when we empower youth, when we build their self-efficacy, when we look at their development and engage them, we're going to be better off in having a great community. So when I look at the impact that the Hispanic Commission made on youth by being able to gather services, to connect with other partners, to establish those partnerships, my networking skills, I was a networker before the term was invented, only because I cared deeply about my community. So when I looked at those dynamics of, not only does it provide information for the community, not only does it hold these conferences for youth, for the development of youth leadership, but I see that it provides a networking piece. When I was a recruiter, and I was, for the whole state of Oregon, if you can imagine, for the Latino population, part of my job was to go out and develop centers of influence. What I did was I got on the phone with a Hispanic commissioner, and I said, I need a list of all the organizations around the state. I went to Southern Oregon. I went to Eastern Oregon, where they have the Four Rivers Cultural Center. Now, that's a model for the rest of the state. I went to Central Oregon, where they have the Collage Festival. And you're absolutely right, Madam Chair, when you say that we need to look at what is happening around our state and be able to connect those successes. So I see that as an integral part of what the commission does. But you know, the other part that the commission plays is establishing a frame of reference for the rest of you. And that is a big impact.
Thank you, Mary Lou. I just think you've done a wonderful job. Besides, you have a gorgeous suit on. But I think you're talking to a panel of people that probably has youth and what we need for our youth, regardless of race, color, whatever, because we all care deeply about youth. It sounds like you're totally involved in that, and we appreciate very much your bringing your testimony. And I'm glad to hear that there's such enthusiasm for what you're doing.
Oh,
so I have seven more people to testify,
absolutely,
and we have to let everybody in this panel go shortly.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate your help so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, I want to thank you, because by the questions you ask, you are helping to develop a viable commission. But I would say to you that having this tough role, that you look at expanding the services of this commission based on the demographics alone and the things that are coming down with the 2000 picture. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Any questions? Thank you were
you
good.
Much.
Thank you.
Next, I have Frank Garcia, Executive Recruiter, Department of Administrative Services.
Madam Senator Flarno, when I told them about testifying, I had a list here, and so I made the mistake of telling at least one that they didn't need to sign because I had the list order here, so I apologize for that. But
you mean there's one more? One more person than we have on our list?
I know I had one person, or told one person not to sign, and that's what I'm getting at.
And that person's here to testify?
Yes.
Okay. So we have eight, so we need to go about... 8 into 15 minutes divided up, and that's how long you get. Okay, let's go.
Could I interrupt one more time, Madam Senator Clarno? We have Senator Gordley, who's
I
here
just,
present, and if she would like to provide a few words, we'd love it.
Senator Gordley, would you come on up, and we'd like to have you testify. I'm sorry, Frank, we'll have Senator Gordley testify first. I did not see you come in the room.
No problem, Madam Chair, and good morning to you and to all of the committee members. For the record, Avell Gordley, Senator in District 10, Portland. And I wanted to just come down briefly and put some comments of support on the record for the Hispanic Commission, but also all of the commissions, and wanted to bring to the attention of the committee a report that you should take into account as you are hearing the testimony about the Hispanic Commission, and again, all of the commissions. The Oregon Progress Board in July of 2000 issued what is now the annual report that documents minority progress toward Oregon benchmarks. And in this July 2000 report, what was revealed is not all positive. Jeff Tryons, Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board, and you all know Jeff, observed that compared to state averages, Hispanics and African Americans in particular actually lost ground between 1990 and 98 in many instances. For almost every indicator that the Progress Board looked at, African Americans and Hispanics improved less rapidly than the state average. And the trends, the areas they looked at included health and education and employment. And again, this report is examining trends, education, health, community, and they were looking at the progress for each of Oregon's minority communities. In addition to African American and Hispanic, they also looked at Asian American and Native American, and again, losing ground between 1990 and 98. We can actually say between 1990 and the present. And so we need to be very concerned about that. And what I have learned in my 10 years as a legislator is that, and I've come to appreciate this, is that the commission really serves us as legislators. They are here to help us develop policy that will better serve, best serve the populations that they represent. And so I would just ask us to take that piece of information into account and keep that in mind. And I would also say that we can probably, as legislators, make even better use of the commissions than we have. And I'm speaking now from my experience.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. Representative Johnson?
Thank you for your testimony, Senator. I agree with everything that you have said, and I appreciate the information that you've brought to our attention. But I'm going to probe your opinion on whether or not you think that the advocacy commissions all ought to be funded at a standard level, and whether or not they should all be run in a business-like way with business plans, performance measures, clearly articulated expectations on the products and the services that they're delivering.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
See you shortly in session.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Garcia, if you will go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. My name is Frank Garcia. I'm the Recruitment and Career Services Manager for the State of Oregon, Department of Administrative Services. Thank you for your time, and I'll be very brief. I want to talk in the context of workforce development. There's a lot of factors going on in our society that people have eloquently addressed. In HR, the two predominant challenges for recruitment are hard-to-fill technical positions and diversity. Diversity in that our workforce does not reflect the changing demographics and all the factors associated with that in regards to service delivery. There's a story, there's been research that's come out about, you know, best practices for diversity. Having a diverse workforce, it elevates your opportunities to increase diversity. It's like what comes first, the chicken or the egg. And best practices many times are identified for identifying new employees as employee referral. Well, if your employee base is not diverse, that doesn't do much for diversity. Moreover, demographic shifts in the Hispanic community have increased by over 200% since 1986. Many of these numbers are English learners or limited English proficient. They are now coming through the door for services access. That currently taxes our existing human resources because the majority of us is a homogeneous institution. We're not bilingual. So that poses some real challenges and creates some inefficiencies in our service delivery, therefore not maximizing taxpayer dollar. The Commission on Hispanic Affairs is a leader in regards to that diversity, being that connector, as well as the other commissions. And I use them as a best practice, and I'm educating other HR managers and recruitment managers to work with these commissions because they have the networks behind them. And we're going to continue to promote that, whether it's through email, whether it's through conversation, formal presentations, etc. The other thing that the commission has also provided is internship opportunities to local Hispanic college students, again, affording them the opportunity to see what it's like to operate in government and process.
Well, you're on that. I see I have a college or a student signed up. If I could have the student come up as well now, Julie Ross, because we're going to have to keep our testimony to 1 minute or people that are signed up won't be able to testify.
Okay.
But since you've gotten off on the student, Spanish speaking, we'd like to hear from Julie as well.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Julie Ross Moda, and I'm a research analyst at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. So I'm not a college student. I'm just a student of the commission's Spanish classes.
Glad to hear from you.
Thanks for having me. So I know my time's really tight, so I won't even bother to refer to my notes. I just want to say that I've taken several classes, some being through Chemeketa Community College, through their Business Center, their TED, I can't remember what it's called. And I've also taken classes at a university level and also as a high school student, you know, some years ago. And the classes taught by the commission are by far superior. It's just they can't compare. And as far as being taught, you know, to state employees, it's a really good opportunity for state employees to also network with each other. So that's a big advantage. And also it's an advantage to my department to have these classes taught here, you know, on the Capitol Mall area, because it takes less time for me to go to class. It's, you know, more cost efficient for my department to send me to these classes as well. So they're very good classes. They're very focused. The teacher's very enthusiastic. He knows what to do to get all the students to learn and to participate. I'm not really sure what else to say about it.
That's excellent, because we did hear earlier testimony about the classes being taught to various folks in the agencies, and you put a real face on it. So far.
Yeah, and there's also, I know of one of my fellow students is a business owner in the city of Salem. So, and I think with the classes, it takes word of mouth as well to get them spread around. So, and to me, it's growing, and it's the positiveness and the worthiness of these classes is the awareness is growing of them. And I just want to also add that it's not only about adding value to me as an employee, it's adding value to my department and in turn to state government to allow me this opportunity.
Thank you, Julie. Now, I didn't mean to stop you from yours. If you have a couple more things to share, I just am so concerned about not letting everyone testify that came here today. So just make it as brief as you can, but I do not want you to not be able to share things with us that are new that haven't already been said.
I'll just thank you, Madam Chair and Subcommittee. I'll just wrap this up very quickly. The intent on the Spanish classes was really to provide a perspective that was in the service delivery arena that may be different from community colleges as to, you know, como está. I mean, we were looking at dynamics in regards to service delivery, and with Sariana and the commission members, we've been able to shape a class that addresses service delivery when individuals come through the door. Lastly, I think that this is resulting in a best practice, and this is the end result of this is going to be increased effective delivery of services and maximizing taxpayer dollar. Thank you.
Darcy, and I'm sorry to rush in. Thank you, Julie. Now I'll have Danny Santos, Education Policy Coordinator, and if you'll come up as well with Merced Flores. I hope I haven't crucified your name. Associate Superintendent in Student Services, Oregon Department of Education. And as you've heard, we're on a. Mm-hmm. We still have quite a few people signed up here. So just hate to rush you, but if you will.
Chair Clarno, members of the committee, I'll try to be brief. It's been my pleasure since mid-October to be the governor. Danny Santos with the governor's office, Education Policy Coordinator. Thank you very much. Since mid-October, I've been asked to be the liaison to the Hispanic Commission. We've assisted them with the state of Secretary of State's change of director's audit, the Department of Administrative Services accounting purposes, and the lone employee. I will just add one thing to the discussion this morning, and that's the diversity of the community that's been described. As we took the governor's mission to Mexico, we had two commissioners, Hispanic Commission members, go, and that included the business community, the education community, housing community, cultural community, and there were two other components, the health component and the judicial legal community that was also interested but did not participate at this time. So those efforts are underway, and the commissioners are making great efforts to make those connections as well.
Thank you, Danny. Nice seeing you again. I appreciate you hurrying. Sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Merced Flores, Associate Superintendent for the Department of Education. I also have been involved with the Commission on Hispanic Affairs for many, many years, and the association has been a benefit to both the Department of Education and also to the people that it serves across this great state of ours. What I'd like to be able to do is just to talk about some statistics that I think are very important to you, and I think in the near future you will get some demographics to various committees, both the House and Education committees. But just to briefly give you some information that we have is that we are knowing that the number of Hispanic students enrolling in Oregon schools is increasing 10% annually. And so every two of every three new minority students are Hispanic. So that's really important information for us to have. In 2000, we had over 56,000 Hispanic K-12 students enrolled in Oregon. And if the current growth continues, by the year 2020, we will have over 135,000 Hispanic students, which is about 140% increase. So you can see that we are receiving this population. This population is just increasing in our public schools. If you look at the English language learners or the students that are learning English in ESL and bilingual education programs, it has risen from over 5,000 students in 1988 to over 41,000 in 98-99. So again, that's like a 645% increase. So again, our numbers are growing tremendously. And the reason that we feel it's important for us to collaborate and coordinate with the Hispanic Commission is that there's a number of joint efforts that we do. We have an Oregon Leadership Conference that we have every summer at Linfield College where we involve between 70 and 80 students, and they are exposed to a number of leadership opportunities. We do this so they can have the types of skills that they can take back into the communities. In fact, we get quite a few from Eastern Oregon, Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon, Southern Oregon, and various parts. We take part in radio and television shows to talk about our 21st Century Education Act, but also the support services that are afforded for all students. Also, we involve ourselves with local committee meetings, national meetings, and also take part in the Spanish language classes. So you can see that we're a great partner with the Commission, and we will continue to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I appreciate you giving the presentation. Next, I have Mr. Salinas and Anthony. Anthony, come forward and pronounce your name as well. I'd rather have you say it than you
ruin
it.
Go ahead.
And as you've heard, we've got a time for about 2 minutes each.
Well, that's going to make me more nervous than I already
am. Oh, I'm sorry.
My name is Miguel Salinas. I'm a person of a corporation that deals with education advocacy. HEART, Hispanic Education Advocacy Resource Team, and I especially appreciate this morning's comments and observations by all of you with respect to our Latino population, our Hispanic population, and so forth. I was especially pleased to hear our Representative Hayden make the observation in terms of that we need to be visible at all levels so that the message can be heard, and also that we can educate ourselves as well as those people around us. I also would like to just say how pleased I am to have this gentleman right next to me, because I've known him since he was kindergarten, and I'm very proud of Tony Vélez. Let me suggest to you that all the conversations with respect to the Hispanic Commission affairs, it all goes back to the education. Education is really the base for economics. Education is the base for involvement. And I'm sure that this will not be the first time that you will hear about my corporation, HEART, because we are pretty aggressive, we are pretty progressive, and we are doing a lot of research that I think that you will find very useful in terms of helping guide the present laws and also maybe create other laws. Just by way of background, I just want you to know, because later on you probably say, well, why is this guy so much so impassionate with education? Well, I'm a product of the Oregon's education. I came here in 1954, so almost a half a century ago I was not an ELL student. I was a sink or swim student. And, my parents really helped me out, and I really appreciate that very, very, very much. And after 31 years in education as a teacher, as a volunteer, as a teacher aide, a principal, an English as a second language bilingual director, I felt like it's time to pay the community with an independent outside voice, not necessarily outside, but maybe building some bridges. So it's not really outside, but it's outside of the box, because I think that we need a voice out there that can articulate some of the concerns that we have across the board. And I just like to emphasize that Mr. Flores has said that we have a lot of kids. And may I say furthermore that 80% of the Latinos are not making the mark. And therefore, the charge for HEART is to dialogue with committees, Oregon Department of Education, individuals, and so forth, so we can go ahead and improve the situation across the state of Oregon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I appreciate your brief testimony. Anthony, sounds like the gentleman to your left knows you a long time.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, my name is Anthony Vélez, and I work for Chemeketa Community College as the director of the College Access Programs here in Salem. But I'm coming to you today as a community member of Oregon, third-generation Woodburn resident, and a supporter of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And I just want to just let you know that I know that we've been talking a lot about bottom lines, dollars, but out in the community, out in the real world, the bottom line is me, and the people probably behind me when it comes to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And I just wanted to let you know that out in the community, they are doing a wonderful job, and they are producing. I guess in brief, I could say I am a product of what the Commission has done. I am a current board member in the city of Woodburn. I'm chairing a urban renewal program and trying to revitalize downtown. I've served on various committees. And the investment, though it might monetarily might have been small in me, I believe I paid that back to the state of Oregon and this country tenfold. And so when you're thinking about the Commission on Hispanic Affairs and what they do, it's not all quantitative. You can't count it. There's not a line item for everything that they do. It's out there in the community. And I just wanted to just reiterate and echo from a lot of Oregonians that the benefit is felt in the hallways, in the colleges and universities, in the public and private sector, and in here within our state capital. That's the benefit the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. You might not always feel it, but you're seeing it out there, and I think I'm a reflection of that. I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to give these comments. And in closing, I just want to put on the record that I think it's very, very, very important to allow the community, especially people of color, adequate time to express themselves. In the city of Woodburn, that is one of our biggest challenges. And by rushing people through, especially when we have a group of highly influential and respected people in our community, we need the opportunity. We're always asked to come. We're here now. I would hope that we could allow some more time for us to express ourselves, and not in a rushing manner, but more of a dialogue. Thank you very much, and I hope you guys have a great day.
Thank you, Anthony. And I would just say that most of the time, the people that come here know that the committees have a certain amount of time, so the people that take more time before you jeopardize your time.
Correct.
So you need to talk about that among yourselves and decide who needs to be giving a briefer presentation, because the last few people who spoke had valuable information as well to us, and I'm very sorry as chairman of this committee to rush you, but everybody that comes to this committee should be told by the people that are bringing your delegation forward of the limited time, because we have to go into session and
sure.
do other people's business at the state as well.
Yeah.
So I'm
Thank
sorry,
you.
But
That's
I appreciate
okay.
your remarks.
Thank you.
And not having people signed up makes it difficult for us as well, because we try to time it by the people that are signed up. So the person that you had that's not signed up, if you have them come forward, and also Eduardo.
That was Julie.
That was Julie. Okay.
Hey, Madam Chair, I hope people understand that in less than 15 minutes, at least you and I will be required by state law to be on the floor of the Senate.
Yes, the House and Senate are required
they
by
will
law.
They will get us if we don't go.
They'll have to call the House and they'll come, tug your arms, come drag us out of here.
Police with handcuffs.
So we're doing the very best we can and trying to let everybody testify, even though we've had to make it short. Go ahead, please.
Yes, for the record, Madam Chair, members of this committee, my name is Eduardo Angulo, and I am the person that coordinated the Latino Youth Summit 2000. And I come before you on support of the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs. And I can tell you just briefly that putting the Latino Youth Summit 2000 together was a daunting task. It was, we wanted to make the emphasis to Oregon that we want to use professionals from Oregon, that we want to get our children, our adolescents, a good example of role models from within the state. I can tell you briefly that in order to put the Latino Youth Summit together, I spoke with over 250 not only high schools, but centers that serve the Latino community throughout the state. And we want to make the emphasis that we didn't want just high school students, but we also want dropout students. We also want Chicano gang members. We also want first-generation Latinos. We want to unite them all at this two-day conference at the University of Oregon. I can tell you that we put together over 20 workshops with 50 presenters, all people from Oregon, and it was a very successful summit. I know Representative Butler mentioned something regarding the lack of participation. I think that it was a misconception there, because the reality is that the Latino Youth Summit that took place in 1998, we have around 150 students. And in this Latino Youth Summit 2000, we have over 250 Latino youth. But I must emphasize that the main reason for the Latino Youth Summit was not only to empower our Latino youth and to help them understand the importance of staying in school and graduating and going on to higher ed, but also to be leaders in their communities. We put together a follow-up, which I think Dr. Trevino may mention too. The reason for this follow-up was that we want the students to go back to their communities with some tentative plans that they could, how they could better their communities. How could they take ownership not only of the good things that were happening in their communities, but of the things that needed to be improved in their communities. I personally traveled all over the state, Ontario, Nisa. I went to Medford, Madras, Portland, Eugene, and talked with kids, talked with the kids that participate in the Latino Youth Summit, but also to the ones that we were hoping that would come to the next Latino Youth Summit. And I can tell you that the report, it is an excellent one. As you all know, we have more Latino and blacks in the prison system than in higher education in Oregon. It is appalling. And I can tell you, the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs have been pivotal in trying to help our Latino youth understand that in order to be a leader, you must follow, but you have to learn along the way that you can do it too. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for the information about the Youth Summit. I would personally like to thank my committee members, who normally are always out at 10:30, which is the ending of our time, and you've stayed almost 25 minutes longer, and I appreciate you hanging in there, because we did want to hear everyone, and I really appreciate it. Thank you, committee. And we will see everyone on Monday, and we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.